The NFL theme song on Fox gets us started on the first segment of our show today, and we're playing a little Thursday morning quarterback here as we look at the Packers 2024 season and look ahead a little bit to 2025. Larry Mueller here with my guest, back with us, Pete Doherty. Pete's a Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network, Wisconsin. He's covered the Packers since 1993 and knows a whole lot about the Packers. And, of course, we want to hear from you. What were some of your maybe favorite moments from the season? What moments made you scream in frustration at your TV? What do you think the Packers should do this offseason? Give us a call. The number's 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Pete Doherty, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Well, thank you, Larry. Thanks for having me.
Tell you what, overall, we'll start with that. Overall, would you say the 2024 Packers season was successful, disappointing, little of both?
Yes, definitely. Definitely all those things. You know, it's funny. We have a weekly question that somebody on our staff, you know, asks all the Packers reporters to answer, you know, in a paragraph, basically. And after the season, it was, what grade would you give the Packers? I gave them a C+. Could be probably talked into giving them a C. Expectations were just so high with how well they played in the playoffs last year. I think that colored a lot of things. I know I went in thinking they'd go 11-6. They ended up going 11-6, but I didn't see 11-6 and descending at the end of the season. I was thinking more likely they'd be ascending at the end of the season. And so that's the reason that the season was a disappointment. You know, there are going to be ups and downs every NFL season. It's a rough business. Player performance is up and down, even for the good teams. There's a lot of ups and downs, the best teams even. But the bad finish, the really poor offense for the last month of the season, the poor passing game, that really took a lot of luster off of a decent season. 11-6 is a pretty decent season.
Jerry emailed. Jerry says he's disappointed with Jordan Love's performance this season. He says it was a tragic mistake to give him $50 million a year based on one season's performance. Love needs to step up his game. He threw way too many interceptions. One obvious reason they weren't able to compete in the division or the playoffs.
He definitely, I agree completely. The biggest thing that can happen for the Packers is for Love to play better next season. That alone will get them a lot of the way to where they're looking to go. He threw way too many interceptions the first half of the season. I think he had 10 in the first 9 games, and he only played basically 6.5 of those games. He only threw one the rest of the regular season and then had a couple in that last playoff game. Still for me too early to say that they made a mistake in paying him. At the time, I for sure would have done it. There are all sorts of good reasons for doing it. Yes, it could end up, it was risky, and it could end up, you know, being a mistake because, you know, if Love's performance doesn't pick up. But there would have been big downside to it, too. I was talking with Mike Holmgren, the former Packers coach, who's now he's a finalist for the Hall of Fame this year. And we were talking about quarterbacks, and he said it really takes until their third season as a starter before you know what you have. And next season, 2025, will be Jordan Love's third season as a starter. This is the season they need to start reaping the rewards of the ups and downs. I'm still not sure this season how much the knee and groin injuries, and especially the knee, affected his play. He looked pretty healthy the second half of the season. I still think he looked just a half step slow on his first couple steps when he tried to leave the pocket, and I wonder if he also had just confidence issues in that knee. It's something that won't heal completely till the off season. You know, I'm not paid to make excuses for him, but we need to be realistic about these things also. And so I do wonder if that was an issue, and we will find out next season. But regardless of whether it was or not, you know, he was an inexperienced quarterback play as far as playing time in the NFL. Now he's had two full seasons. He'll have an off season to digest everything, to work on the things he needs to, all of that. And the Packers need to see the rewards starting next season for all the ups and downs they go through. If you look at Favre and Rodgers, in their sixth season, in their fifth season, they started turning the corner as a player, and in their sixth season, that's when they hit pay dirt, became really good players. So that's when the Packers won Super Bowls in the sixth season for both of those guys. Not saying Love has to win the Super Bowl this year to be a, you know, 25 to be a success, but his play definitely needs to show real improvement and sophistication.
Yeah. And, you know, you think about it, he was throwing to some young guys. I think it was the second season in a row the Packers were the youngest, had the youngest NFL roster. You look at that as a problem, or could it be a plus? Maybe we don't have the veteran leadership that we need to have.
I think it's more a plus than a problem because it's such a young man's game. And these guys have played a lot now. So even they're going to be young next season in terms of age.
Yeah.
But they won't be young. They won't be young as far as playing experience goes. And one of the biggest one of the biggest position disappointments this year was receiver. After the way those guys finished last year, really thought they would take a nice jump this season. Did not happen. I think they were, depending on, you know, which statistical service you go to, they were about second in the league in drops. And while Love is definitely deserves, you know, his share of responsibility for how the offense slipped at the end of the season, you know, the drops at receiver were a significant issue also.
Yeah. And in some ways, I think Coach LaFleur seemed to be making a nod toward veteran leadership when he said that our quarterback had to kind of become more vocal. I think he said at the end, didn't he, that Love needed to become more vocal and take more charge than he has.
He did. Love has a low key guy. You know, he's not a big personality. He's not a big extrovert. But you know, the quarterback position is just, you know, baked into that position that you're the leader. And so, you know, there is much of it is by example and performance, but there still is, you know, also the overt leadership, the, you know, saying things at the right time, the getting on guys occasionally, but also, you know, having them like you so they want to play for you. And so, yeah, he's, you know, he's not a natural that, like Favre was just a big, big personality and an outgoing guy. Yeah. That was easy. That was who he was. Love is not that kind of guy, and he shouldn't try to be. But, you know, he's starting to build up some experience now. So, yeah, that was the thing. The LaFleur answered that. The question was, what's he need to do? What's he need to work on this offseason? And LaFleur talked far less about, you know, technical quarterback things, you know, like footwork. And, you know, basically said the main thing was just to become a little more of an outgoing, overt leader.
Yeah. Well, injuries certainly played a role this season, although I don't think we suffered as much as perhaps the Lions, for example, did. But I think it was a big factor. Christian Watson likely was a big factor.
Yeah. You know, it's funny with injuries, so much of it, it's not how many you lose, it's who you lose.
Yeah.
You think back to 2010, you know, I'm sure you remember then when they won the Super Bowl that year. They had their injured list was, I think it was the biggest I've been covering since 93. And I think their injured reserve list was the longest of all my time covering. It was upwards of 20 guys, I think. It was in the upper teens for sure. But they didn't lose any guys that they couldn't afford to lose. The positions where they lost pretty good players, they had just as good, if not better, to replace them. This year, they really, if you look at their injury totals, it wasn't bad at all because everybody in this league, that's the nature of this game, is everybody has a lot of injuries. And Detroit had a ton. I think what ended up catching up, losing Hutchinson eventually caught up with them. He's as good a defensive player as there is in the league, and that eventually is probably going to bite you, and I thought it, you know, finally did in the playoffs. But the Packers, they really didn't get hit that hard, except that their quarterback got hurt, and he played through it, and they won the two games without him. But I do wonder if it affected his performance later in the year, at least somewhat. And then you're right, Watson is the one guy. I'm not saying he was their best receiver, because that's probably Jaden Reed. But Watson's combination of size and speed, they just can't replace that. And that affects the way defenses play, because they have to honor him, you know, going deep on any given play. So that opens things up for other people. So that injury did take a chunk out of their offense. And, you know, he's not – I mean, he won't be back till mid-November next year. So they're basically won't have him till late, and he probably won't be the same guy until, you know, the 2026. So that's a position and a role and a talent that they have to somehow replace this offseason.
Yeah, he was so fast. Or is, I guess, when he's healthy, he has to draw cover. You know, you have to know when he's in there if you're the opposing team. And that creates, you know, opportunities for guys like maybe Reed or somebody else receiving the ball.
It does. And, you know, I was just watching, one of my colleagues is going through every game and grading all the players, and he takes a whole week to do that, and he sends me plays, and he sent me a play from the Minnesota game in Minnesota where they gave up like a 40-yard touchdown pass, the Packers did, and it was the Justin Jefferson effect. Jefferson runs a crossing route underneath, and the safety comes up, and they throw over the safety's head for the touchdown. And now Christian Watson's not Justin Jefferson, don't mean to suggest that for a second. But that's the kind of thing we're talking about is, you know, when one player draws extra coverage, that opens things up for other guys. And I don't know how the Packers are going to do it. Maybe they'll try to do it in free agency. Maybe they'll use a really high draft pick on a receiver. But they've got to do something to help Love there just to get a more dynamic presence into their receiving core if they can.
Yeah. Dobbs? What'd you think of his performance this year, Romeo Dobbs?
Yeah, okay. You know, he's got hurt a couple times, and that, you know, that issue he had in the middle of the season where he just seemed to be really upset about his role and he didn't show up for practice. I mean, that's just unthinkable in this league. Not unthinkable because, I mean, every once in a while, a couple times a year, it seems to happen around the league. But it's really damaging to the player's career, damaging to the locker room. And, you know, that did nothing to help their season. He came back, his teammates accepted him from what I could tell. And he's a good possession receiver. But the Packers have, you know, they basically have a roster, a receiving core full of receivers who are, you know, if you're going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, they've got a bunch of maybe mid twos to fours in their receiving core, and they don't have a guy who scares defenses and who changes the way they play and who can make plays even when they're double covered. These guys are hard to come by, but it sure helps an offense if you have one of them. And I think that's one of the reasons why receiver, I don't think it's their greatest need, but it's, you know, it's amongst their top three, I would say.
Yeah. Pete Doherty, our guest today, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. It was great to have Pete come by. He's spent a lot of time with the Packers and knows a whole lot about football and the Packers. You can join in with your questions. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or you could email us the email address, talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Great to have you along today as we talk about the Green Bay Packers with our guest Pete Doherty, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Join in, 800-642-1234. 1234 email to talk at WPR.org. Let's take some calls. Jonah in Green Bay, we'll go to you now. Jonah, hi. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I got a question about the Packers defense. So I haven't been following football all that long, like maybe just since the beginning of the pandemic, like 4 or 5 years or so. It feels like there's not ever any consistency with the Packers defense. I'm wondering, has it always been this way? Has it always been they're either like really on top of things in one play, or they're really just scrambling around like a bunch of cartoon characters in the next? Like, that's what it feels like.
Yeah. Jonah, thanks for calling. Pete, what do you think?
Yeah, well, that's a really big question and hard to answer in a nutshell, but a couple things. The NFL is an offensive, all the rules are geared for offense, so it's, playing defense just keeps getting harder. It's gotten harder and harder year after year over the last 50 years. And this year, for instance, there were no great defenses. There were good defenses, but nothing even close to great anywhere in the league. The Packers have been, they were a pretty good defensive team when they won the Super Bowl in 2010. I think they were top three in scoring that year in fewest points allowed. And they've had 1 or 2 years since then where they've been pretty good, but that's it. To have a really good defense, you need, Dom Capers, their former defensive coordinator, always said you need three difference makers. And those guys can be hard to find, especially when you're picking later in the draft and you got to hit on some picks. And they really haven't, they've been low on the difference maker scale since Clay Matthews started, his play started declining because of age and injuries. And I thought Rashawn Gary might be headed that way a few years ago. He had a really big second half of, I think it was his third season in the league, but then he tore his ACL, came back, played pretty well. They paid him. And he's just been a little above average since then. They do seem to have drafted a difference maker this year in Edgerrin Cooper. Like, they may have a real star there finally. But they really, really could use at least one more. That's why I'm an advocate. Generally not big on trading for guys, and these huge free agent moves often backfire and end up being a waste of money. And this isn't fantasy football like Ted Thompson used to say, but if they could trade, if the Raiders are willing to trade Max Crosby because they want draft picks because they're rebuilding, I would look really hard at trading for Max Crosby. He's just young enough still where they could probably get 3 really good years out of him, and that would give them 2 difference makers. One is a pass rusher, which is huge. That could make a big difference for their defense. I'll be really curious to see how that happens or see what happens there and if they can do something like that this offseason. But your overall observation is right. I mean, they've been a very average or worse defense for most of the last 15 years, and they were actually better this year. They improved on their new defensive coordinator, Jeff Hafley. I think they were 6th in fewest points allowed. Their run defense was really good. But they still did have trouble getting stops when you absolutely had them in a league where a lot of teams have trouble with that. And again, pass rusher, pass rusher, pass rusher. That's what helps you get those stops when you got to have them.
Yeah, I thought Hafley did a pretty good job. He had some injuries there, too, some key injuries. And Jair Alexander comes. I mean, he only played, a third of the games.
Apologize for interrupting, but when we talk about the difference makers, that actually was – Alexander is their most talented defensive player, but in the last 4 years, I think he's missed like, I think it's about half the games, and he's getting older, so these injuries are going to accumulate, and I just have to think the Packers are going to move on from him this offseason because you just can't pay a guy that much money and have him unavailable. But not when you have only one key difference maker and then he hardly plays, You know, your margin for error goes way down. So they do have, I think they've got a lot of talent, both sides of the ball. They actually have okay talent, but they still have some, a couple big moves that they need to make and hit on this offseason if they want to be a real contender next year.
Let's go to Jim in Verona next. Hi, Jim. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Pete. I'm curious what you think of the possibility of the Packers picking up our old friend Davante Adams.
Yeah, that's a big question floating around. This is one of those where if I'm the Packers, I don't think I'm interested. He's 32. He was a great player. He's still very good, but the decline for him could start kicking in at any time. This is about the age with even the best receivers where it starts kicking in. If I'm, and he's still going to cost a fair amount of money. If I'm the Packers, I don't think I'm interested in bringing him back. It would be nice to have a guy with his experience to share what he's learned about playing receiver with these younger guys. But if they add a receiver to this offseason, they're going to want to get those young guys on the field to get them, because they have upside and they'll improve. So if I'm the Packers, I pass on Davante Adams. The history of Brian Gutekunst, to me, suggests that he'll pass, but you never know on any given player. It's just, we were talking earlier about being a young team, Larry, and this is a young man's game. And, man, a receiver getting up to 32, he could have a really nice season next year, but the odds are just as good that the injury problems will start kicking in and a little bit of decline. And you just got to move on from things. And he's 32 is just a little too old for me, unless they could get him at a really cheap price. And I find it hard to believe that he'll play for anybody for a low price tag.
Jim, thank you for calling. Let's take a call from Rich in DeForest. Hi, Rich.
Hi, guys. I've been watching for years and years and years. I love the NFL, but I can't make heads or tails of cap money. So could Pete go through it? Go ahead quickly. Let's say I'm a great defensive back. You signed me to a contract of $20 million, but you're going to give me a signing bonus of 10. Okay, how does that affect the cap money? And what about dead money? I've heard that too. I don't know where that comes from. And guaranteed contracts. So if you could do that very simply for a guy to understand. Thank you.
All right. Rich, thanks a lot for calling. There's probably a lot of people that have that question, Pete.
Yeah. It's. I hope I can explain this succinctly. I'll give it a shot. So the example you bring up, 5-year deal, $20 million, $10 million bonus. So you get the $10 million right when you sign the contract. Now that, because it's a signing bonus, is prorated over the 5 years. For cap purposes, that $10 million counts $2 million against the cap each year of that contract. So your cap number starts out with the first year will be $2 million because of the signing bonus proration. And then whatever they make the base salary that first year is the rest of the cap number. So let's say they pay you that $10 million bonus, but then they only pay you $1 million salary. So you're getting $11 million in cash, a lot of money. But you'll only count $2 million from the signing bonus and $1 million base salary. So your cap number is only $3 million. Now let's say after two seasons, things have gone really badly and they decide to cut you. What happens in that season then is the dead money you're talking about, because the $2 million in years 3, 4, and 5 still have to count against your cap because they paid you that money. So all that money accelerates into year 3, so that you'll count $6 million on the cap if they cut you after 2 years, even though you're no longer on the team. I don't know if that covered, did that cover
guaranteed,
the whole thing?
Guaranteed, he said something about guaranteed money.
Oh, and guaranteed money is just, they can, the signing bonus is guaranteed. They can't take that money back, or just under very specific circumstances can they get that money back. So that's guaranteed money. And they can guarantee, like with quarterbacks especially, they'll guarantee money through the first 2 or 3 years of the contract. And as long as you show up and play football, you get that money. If you get hurt, you still get it. But you do have to show up for work, but that money is yours no matter what. And so when you're evaluating a contract a guy signed, the number that always gets reported is the average, and that's important. But really the most important thing is the guaranteed money, because that's the money the guy's going to get no matter what, as long as he shows up for work.
And I think there's plenty of cap space for the Packers going into, I think, wasn't it $50 million or something like that?
It is. Now, and a big chunk of that is still going to be eaten up by costs that haven't shown up yet. You know, there's they have restricted free agents that they have to tender. They've got a draft class that they'll have to pay. There are several built-in expenses not counted on that. But even if you count all that, they still have, I think it's like $25 or $26 or $27 million in cap space, which is a lot, because as we just talked about, when you for the proration, you can sign a guy to a really big contract and keep his cap number low for the first year or two. So they basically have enough money where they can be very liberal if they want to in spending and free agency or trading for an expensive player. They can do all those things. Money will not be a limitation to what they do in this offseason. The limitation will be whether they can get the guys that they want, that they think are worth that kind of money.
Yeah. And Gutekunst he didn't do a great job on the first round picks. He did on second, I think, with Edgerton James and a couple of other guys too. I think Evan Williams comes to mind. He did some things over the course of the year, but his free agent pickups, those were really good. Xavier McKinney and Josh Jacobs as running back. I was just thinking about those picks. I think were pretty good ones.
Yeah, I think you can say he hit home runs on both of those. You know, he's spent big in free agency twice. He did it back in, 19, when he signed Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith and Adrian Amos and an offensive lineman whose name is escaping my mind right now. But, you know, he did pretty well with those signings. The Smiths especially produced really well for several years for the Packers. And then this year he spent big again. In between... The pandemic hurt a lot of teams' cap, and that hurt the Packers really bad. Plus, Aaron Rodgers' contract and Bakhtiari's, they were just mortgaging contracts just to get under the cap, and they couldn't do much in free agency. The two guys they signed this past season were home runs. The problem that I'm seeing, looking just through the prospective free agents this offseason, is, and their great needs are, pass rusher, cornerback, and receiver. I'm not seeing any pass rushers or cornerbacks who are those positions equivalents of a Josh Jacobs or Xavier McKinney. It's just they're just not there. So I don't know that they're going to be able to make any big signings there that'll make that big a difference. They may have to just sign several guys and hope, you know, one or two of them pans out. T. Higgins is available at receiver. I don't know if they would spend the money it'll take to get a receiver, and maybe Cincinnati will sign him before free agency, but that's one guy who's a possibility at that position. But at least at first glance, I'm not seeing the availability of a player such as the two that they signed this past season. So that's why I'm wondering if the trade route might be the way that they have to go.
Yeah. Jim emailed us, and you mentioned Pat. We were talking about pass rush a bit, and he said, aside from a few games, the defensive pass rush was mediocre. And Jim is wondering, was it the scheme? Was it the personnel? What needs to be done?
Yeah, that's an age old question. They did fire their defensive line coach. That suggests that LaFleur thinks that was at least, LaFleur and Halfley think that was part of the problem, it probably was. You just didn't see the kind of improvement that you would expect, like from Lucas Van Ness, their first round pick 2 years ago. He did not make a big jump this year. So you wonder if there was a coaching disconnect there. The scheme should be good for a pass rush. I mean, you know, they went from where the outside linebackers slash defensive ends stand up to where they put their hand on the ground. And that theoretically putting your hand on the ground is a better rushing position because you're coming out of the sprinter's blocks. But the rush was not – the four-man rush was not good enough this year. I mean, mediocre is the best you can say about it. So, you know, we will find out. It was a combination of the talent and the coaching, I'm sure. But the Packers, you know, LaFleur and Halfley must think the coaching was part of it because they're making a change at that position.
Yeah. Pete Doherty, our guest, questions for him as we talk Packers. You can join in. We'll get you on pretty quickly at 1-800-642-1234. Questions for Pete, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@wpr.org. Got an email from Orly. His comment is, what about adding a William Henderson or John Coons type halfback? Great blockers, but also a threat for the outlook pass. Not them in particular, but somebody like them.
Yeah, yeah. So they had a fullback in camp, but they ended up cutting him, and they basically use tight ends to some degree in that kind of role. Not many teams have fullbacks, but a handful do, and they, you know, Juszczyk at San Francisco has been a really good player. I don't know that if the Packers have any plans to look in the draft this year for somebody like that. But they, you know, a lot of teams use a tight end in a quasi fullback type role. It just depends on the body type you're looking for. They appear to be open to keeping a fullback. I think if you look at the rosters around the league, I would guess without having done it, we're at a point, I mean, the position's almost extinct. I would guess there's 10 or fewer teams that have a fullback on the roster now. But, you know, LaFleur runs the Shanahan offense, and Shanahan has one out in San Francisco, and they did have one in camp. So it appears to be something they're open to. The hard part apparently is finding the right guy who can do both of those things you talk about, because he's got to both be a blocker and, you know, a guy who's pretty good at getting out and catching the ball and running with it afterwards.
Let's take another call. Yordis in Colfax, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. I was wondering if you could compare the Washington Commanders' kind of startling rise and kind of the joyful play that has gotten them far in the playoffs, like the Packers last year. The Packers were young. They were exciting. Everything was just clicking at the right time. And that maybe this year teams studied the Packers a lot more carefully, weren't going to be surprised by them. And then, of course, all the injuries affected them. But just that the Commanders kind of remind me of the Packers last year.
Hmm.
I agree completely. I was thinking the exact same thing watching the Washington game over the weekend. I don't know if you saw, but Sean Payton, the coach of the Broncos, after they clinched their playoff berth in the final game of the season, and they had a really young team with a rookie quarterback, and his locker room, all the players gathered around him, he said, "Let me tell you something, remember this, young and hungry is dangerous." And he said it like three times. And that's what the Packers were in 2024, and that's what the Washington looked like this year. Young, naive in a good way, and hungry, and just out to prove themselves and just playing. And I've got the exact same vibe that you did. And one other thing I would add to this season with the Packers is I don't think they handled the increased expectations well enough, because Washington will face this next year now. They're riding a great crest, and it's great. And who knows, it might even take into a Super Bowl win. But next year, no matter how far, what happens from here on out, they've already set a really high bar for next season. And guys start thinking they arrived, and you lose that little bit of hunger that Sean Payton was talking about. That can make all the difference in the world. And I think the Packers, They lost that. They didn't have that young and hungry vibe this year, even though they were young. And, you know, I don't think they handled that the greatest. The only upside to their really disappointing end of the season is maybe that stirs the hunger. And if some of these guys thought they'd arrive, maybe they no longer think that, and that the team will be a little hungrier again next season. Mm-hmm. But I was thinking the exact same thing watching Washington play this weekend.
Yep, they were a lot of fun to watch. I saw a few of their games. They were a lot of fun to watch. And they did have that excitement. It was just great to watch them. It's fun.
Yeah, that quarterback, you know, whatever ups and downs he had, it seems like whenever he got the ball at the end of the game, if they needed a score, he got it for them.
Yeah, very, very good. Yurtis, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dennis in Wisconsin Rapids. We'll go to you. Hi, Dennis.
Oh, morning. Hey, I'm just curious why they're not using Malik Willis. He's got good leadership qualities, runability, accurate passer. If they'd use him maybe 3 to 5 plays, why they're not implementing him, I do not understand.
He was one of Goody's pickups this last year, and probably we wouldn't have made the playoffs without him.
Yeah, 7th-round draft pick right after final cuts. That was a really good trade to have a backup quarterback. Basically, so he started 2 games and played the second half of 2 games, and they went 3-1 in those games. That's more than you can ask for from a backup quarterback. And, yeah, I'm with you all the way on that. You know, obviously the guy showed enough where they can trust the ball in his hands, and that running threat that you get, you know, the threat of the run pass option, the threat of the run option where he can either hand it off or keep it. There's all sorts of plays there for goal line and short yardage. I don't know why LaFleur didn't do it. You know, when you ask those kind of questions during the season, they won't answer them because they don't want to tip off opponents to what might or might not be coming. So they just give an ambiguous answer. So whenever he was asked about it, he'd say, yeah, it's something we're thinking about. They didn't do it until, I don't know if you noticed, in that last game against Chicago early in the game, the last regular season game, they had a player in the first quarter where Willis came in, Love stayed on the field and lined up at receiver, and Willis played quarterback, and he ran. He took the snap and had like a 3-yard run. And I wonder if they were they doing that just to give their next week playoff opponent something to think about, or were they checking to see how it worked, and was it something they actually were thinking of using in the playoffs? But the problem was Love hurt his arm and Willis hurt his thumb, so in that game. So I think whatever they were thinking there went out the window. This is something I definitely will be asking LaFleur about. We won't get a chance to talk to him until, I think maybe not until the owners meetings in late March, but that's definitely on the agenda for something to ask him about. And I don't know why you wouldn't do it. You know, that running, the threat of all those options of run, pass, handoff, or pitch it, you know, or having the quarterback keep it. There's a lot there for good short yardage and goal line plays. I'd be surprised if they don't do something like that, but you know, I don't know what LaFleur is thinking, so maybe we'll find out this offseason.
Dennis, thanks again for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk@WPR.org. Larry Mueller here, my guest Pete Doherty, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network, Wisconsin, here on the Wisconsin Public Radio News. Talking Packers today with our guest Pete Doherty of the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Coming up, just to let you know, we'll be talking with the author of the book, The Living Great Lakes, Searching for the Heart of the Inland Seas, that at noon today in our next segment. But right now it's Packers, and you can join in at 800-642-1234, email to talk@WPR.org. In an email, John wonders or thinks we didn't take full advantage of Jacobs. A great rushing attack should mean a strong play-action attack, but those things never seem to mesh. What do you think?
They didn't. And for the first half season, maybe. You know, I wondered if it was because Love was coming back from the injury, and if you put him under center, he's got to move more. And so I wondered if they put him in pistol and shotgun so he wouldn't have to move as much. And but as he got healthier, they would do more of the under center play action. LaFleur talked after the season about how their running game, it was demonstrably, I'm sure their numbers bear this out, was they ran the ball much better out of pistol and shotgun than they did under center. And so I don't doubt that that's true. I do wonder and want to ask him about later this offseason is, even if they did run the ball better from shotgun and pistol than under center, did it work to the detriment of their offense overall that they didn't do more from under center, because then their play action game would be better? And the reason it would be, in pistol and shotgun, when you're handing the ball off, the quarterback's facing the defense. So the defense can see the ball, and so they can see whether you're handing it off or not. When you're under center, you turn, your back's to the defense, the ball's hidden, so it's harder to tell if the running back is getting the ball or not. And that extra, you know, just half tick, half step can make all the difference in the world in coverage, you know, for a guy being on a receiver's hip as opposed to being, a half step off and there being enough of a window to make the throw. So I do wonder if, even though they ran it better from shotgun snaps, if the offense as a whole suffered. And I wonder if what their off-season study of themselves, the self-scouting, will prove there. My suspicion is that what you're pointing at there is probably right, and I wonder if we will see more under-center stuff next season.
James emailed us, what do you see for the future for A.J. Dillon?
I personally don't see any reason why they'd bring him back. They've got younger and better in Emmanuel Wilson and, Marshawn Lloyd, their third-round pick last year. I mean, he hardly played even in camp, and he got hurt right away when he played during the season, so we have hardly seen him. But they used a high pick on him, and he certainly flashes some speed and explosiveness. And then their other running back, I can't believe I'm Chris Brooks, is a big special teams guy, and they also used him a lot on third downs because they liked him as a pass protector. I think they've got younger, cheaper, and better, so I don't know why they would bring Dillon back. My strong suspicion is that they won't.
Lynn in Pewaukee emailed us, what about hiring Mike McCarthy?
Sounds like he's in the running for the Saints job. He's getting a second interview with them. Second interview means it's serious. There's a couple other guys who are getting second interviews too, but no, I don't. I've heard other people bring it up too. I do not see that happening. I mean, you know, what capacity would it be? There's no way that they're going to fire Matt LaFleur. So, and I don't think McCarthy would work for anybody in any other role than head coach. But I thought it would have been really fun if he'd have gotten the Bears job. That would have been interesting. But it sounds like he's got a real crack at the Saints job, so I'll be curious to see how that one goes.
You mentioned the Bears, and here we had an email from Luann from Green Bay. How concerned should we be about the Bears' new coach? Might they have a keeper this time?
They might. The one thing I'll say is, I mean, the guy seems very impressive. What he did with Detroit's offense. Now, he had a lot of talent to work with, but still, he pulled a lot of strings there, and that offense was very impressive. He looks like a creative play caller. I've heard, I know somebody who played for him with a different team who thought really highly of him. So he does seem good. The one caution is every year there's a hot coaching candidate, and it often turns out 3 years later that guy was no better than anybody else that was available that year. Not all the time. You know, Holmgren was the hot one, and he ended up being great. So this guy very well could be good. And on paper, he appears to be the most promising hire that they've made. And I would say, so I've been covering since 93, and I would say the most promising hire they've made in that time. And, you know, they need somebody to work with that quarterback because that guy's got talent. So yeah, I'm sure the Packers got to be concerned about that, but we don't know what running a team is so much different than coaching an offense, and you never know until the guy sits on that seat. And the converse is, how will this affect Detroit now? If he is really that good, maybe the Lions' offense suffers for it.
Yeah. Charlie emailed us. Charlie thinks they should put some serious time into developing Malik Willis more at quarterback. Every time he's in there, he makes good decisions, Charlie says. He apparently has a great arm, very athletic. Charlie also says they should look into trading Watson and Alexander if they can find another team that wants chronically injured players.
Yeah, well, nobody's going to trade for Alexander. He's that $17.5 million he's going to make in 2025. I just can't imagine any team trading for that contract. I can't imagine that happening. So I think the Packers are just going to have to cut him, unless he would take a big pay cut, and I don't think he would. And the Packers might be ready to move on anyway. And Watson, nobody's going to trade for an injured guy, but. It's part of the game, and even when some guys have injury histories in college and it carries on to the pros, some don't, but they get hurt in the NFL. Some guys just, their bodies are not made to withstand the rigors of the NFL, and it sure looks like that's two of them.
What about special teams? Brandon McManus was very important after going through, I forgot how many kickers, but wondering about did we have better special teams play this year?
The kicking and punting was really good this year, the first four games until they went to McManus. What was that? That was like four or five games in, I think. But yeah, he seemed to solve their kicking issues. Be stunned if they don't re-sign him in the offseason. He's a free agent, but I'll be stunned if they don't get something done with him. Because that last year and a half with the issues they were having, I mean, you just can't lose games by missing 43-yard field goals. It's just the margins are too thin in this league. Those things have to be close to automatic now. The coverage teams were okay. The return game wasn't very good. The first charge of special teams is the old medical oath, first do no harm. And so they were okay in that regard, I thought, but they're not a plus. They haven't been a plus for the team. Bisaccia, he's one of the highest paid special teams coaches. He's also an assistant head coach, so I think he helps LaFleur in other areas besides just special teams. I get the sense from talking to people over there that he's thought of really highly in the building, in the football side of the building. Sure sounds to me like there's no way they're making a change there. They have not become one of the best special teams in the league. I think they're better than they were for most of the previous, 15 years, maybe even more than that. But I would consider them mostly fulfilled the first do no harm. But then you do want to, they didn't force turnovers or things like that this year. It does help if your special teams can win you a game. I guess they did have the block kick against Chicago that won them that game. The block field goal at the end, the first go round.
Yeah. Otherwise we'd have lost every game in our division. Pete, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking time to be with us today. It's always great to talk with you, and I hope we can do this again. Thank you so much.
No, thanks for having me, Larry, and I look forward to the next time.
Pete Doherty, Packers columnist for the Green Bay Press Gazette and USA Today Network Wisconsin. Great to have him with us, and we'll get him back, and we'll do it again. Coming up, talking the Great Lakes, I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.